Well, hey, everybody, welcome to the Virtue Signal. I'm Bill Whittle with my friend Alfonso Rachel, and this is the show where we talk about kind of the philosophical and moral underpinnings of the issues of the day. And so today I thought we might talk a little bit about discipline, internal discipline, you know, the kind of things that keep people from, generally speaking, being good people and have learned how to control themselves so that they don't become, generally speaking, bad people. I want to talk about family in a minute. I went to British schools where I was several times a year. They would administer fatal beatings to everyone, and that was an environment where corporal punishment with a cane was almost never used because everybody was terrified of it. Me among them. There was a time when we were in art class, and we had a teacher who, big tall guy with curly hair, we called Big Bird, and he. He left the room for 10 minutes. He said, I'm leaving the room for 10 minutes, and I shall be back in 10 minutes, and I want you to be quiet and at work. So we were working with clay. He's out the door for 3 minutes. People are throwing clay. And the next thing you know, we find ourselves outside the assistant headmaster's office, and he's just keeping us there. They're in there drinking tea and smoking cigars, but we think they're in there figuring out where they're going to put the bodies. And they bring us in one by one. And as each kid comes out, you know, he comes out crying, and I'm a W him at the end of the line here. And then finally I go in, and they, and I'm thinking, man, they're going to give me a fatal beating. We imagined we had seen the line of canes, you know, there was like a little wicker cane, kind of like the Charlie Chaplin cane for minor offenses, working its way up to this thing, you know, with glass embedded in it and barbed wire and all this stuff. Anyway, they just said, oh, Mr. Whittle, we're very disappointed with you and blah, 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 blah. And I was so wrought up by that point that I kind of left crying like everybody else did. Now, I've given this whole dog and pony show to say that my experience in British schools, which had a much more rigid sense of discipline than the American schools I came to immediately when I moved to Florida in 1972, I felt so much safer. I was so much happier. I was so much more relaxed under a system of strict discipline than I was in these schools in Miami, where I was genuinely in fear of my life from students, and where nobody seemed to care, where there were, seemed to be no rules. And I think that that early sense of discipline has had a real strong effect on me.
Yeah, it's, you know, as the Word of God says, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, you know, and, you know, here in
an iron rod, a nice thick one right. that I smite these children with on a daily basis.
That's right, man. That's old school.
Whether they've done anything or not, I just want to condition them.
Yes, just have the fear.
But seriously, fear is... Fear is a useful way to discipline children, and we're not talking about parents that punch their kids in the face, you know. We're not talking about the psychopaths, but we're talking about, as children, we learn from being made afraid of things that we probably shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And, you know, I remember the days where it was like, you know, go get me something to beat you behind with. And
Richard Pryor thing, go out and cut me a switch, you know, all the way eyes. I just,
right? Yeah. You know, because she'll go back there and she'll get the tree. You can't
get a thin switch.
Right? No. That ain't going to cut it, man. And you know, especially when you have like, you know, them shoe throwing parents or, you know, anything they can get their hands on if you don't move fast enough. So, but the thing is, of course, you know, things like this can also be images of abuse, and you can't just spank your kid. The only time you pay attention to your kid can't just be when you're angry with them and you're going to spank them.
Absolutely right.
And that's where it falls off. You got to have that reinforcement, that healthy reinforcement of love and stuff like that. And those things have to be balanced, you know, but we've come up in an era of like timeout, you know, and taking away privacy. See, people make associations with these things, you know,
and reasoning with children,
right?
Reasoning with like 4-year-olds.
Yeah.
Erasmus. We've already spoken about why taking somebody else's stuff is wrong. So maybe you could explain to me why you thought this. Stop it.
Yeah, yeah. You got to bring the belt to him. You know, he's like, okay, now you notice how that hurts when you do things like that. That hurts other people. Let's start learning that lesson in empathy. Okay. All right. Now you.
Yeah, and I should point out, by the way, that I never was actually caned at school, and I probably was severely spanked probably twice in my life, I think. Because I let my dad get to 3, right? He's going to count to 3. 1,
right.
2, Mm-hmm. Two and a three, boom. But the point I'm trying to make is that this is not something like these the way that the Germans used to raise their children with just these fatal beatings for anything. It's just a sense that there are lines and behaviors and things that you have to adhere to, and it's not important that you understand why. I'm saying so. I'm your parents, and kids who have those kind of boundaries tend to be a lot happier.
But we associate, the child psychology that we have, here in America, we've done ourselves a disservice, man, because it's like, like we said, spanking has been frowned upon. And don't get me wrong, because there are people who have it's kind of warranted because some people abuse these things, which is no, but spanking is a hefty tool. And it's a thing that's been scrutinized and taken away from us. And we've replaced these things with we're going to take your privileges away. Now, don't you think it's kind of strange that now we associate privilege with something negative? Right? It's like, no, you don't discipline your kid by taking away their privilege. You beat that behind, right?
Give them some kind of incentive.
Right. Or we punish them with work. And then we wonder why people have a bad work ethic. Right? It's like, you're going to do some chores. You're going to do some work. It's like, no, you should be blessed if you got work to do, right? If you got a job where somebody's going to hire, that should be a blessing. That should not be something that should be associated with punishment. But we've replaced the spanking with work. We've replaced the spanking with taking away privileges. We've taken away spanking with time and replaced it with timeout. So we wonder why people have these negative associations with these things. And these are the things that go out into the culture. And more people are becoming more spoiled, entitled, because they lack that sense of
unhappy
because there's that primal, that sense of empathy, that this is the law right here. Learn the law. You break the law, it's going to hurt. All right. Learn that.
And children are afraid of the world, and they should be. And for parents who don't put any limits on them, the child feels as if nobody's going to know or care if I disappear. I have a close connection to somebody who decided to leave living with their mom and go and live with their dad because she realized that all of her friends were nervous about bringing the report card home because they were worried about what their parents were going to say and do, and she didn't worry about her report card because nobody cared. And that kind of sense of structure is really important. I don't want to get overly personal with this, but, I would like to talk about fathers for a minute. One of the things that is the single greatest correlation among criminals, and especially violent criminals, it's not class, it's not race, it's not educational level, it's not income, it's none of that. It's by far, it is fatherless boys. By far. That is the single great correlation. Between people who find themselves in trouble with the law. And, we all have seen the movies, and there's a reason why this works, this idea of the good cop, bad cop interrogation. Good cop, bad cop is the carrot and the stick working together. Mm. Sometimes the carrot works, sometimes the stick works. Let's put them both together. We're going to have one person who's going to be the mean person. We're going to have the other person who's going to be the nice person. And it's a carrot and stick arrangement. But in that traditional family that has fallen apart in the last 50 years or so, you have so many single mothers who have to be, or at least who attempt to be, the nurturers, and then they have to be the discipliners, and then they have to be the nurturers again. And I think the kids just kind of mix all these signals up. There's something to be said for wait till your father gets home because it clarifies for a child the idea that, okay, I mean, I love my father, but he is the guy who's going to be doing the discipline. And then after I've been sent to bed, without dinner or whatever the case may be, then mom can kind of come in and soften it up a little bit. And that's how it works really well. And when you take one of those partners out of there and you leave just one cop who has to be good cop and then 20 seconds later, bad cop, then good cop again – not so good. The presence of a father in the house brings so much to children that is missing today. And I know you had an interesting story about that. I don't know if you want to get into it too much, but my dad was, 1960s, he was a hotel manager. So I didn't see a lot of him. He was working. Your father figure came into your life relatively late, right? And turned you around.
Yeah, about when I was about 7 years old, you know, I was introduced to this, he planted a seed, you know, and of course, you know, being where I was, there were other influences that got in the way, but that seed was planted, and you know, and thank God it got watered at some point, and I started mm-hmm. to reflect on those things that he was trying to teach me. And you know, and it's interesting when you say, you know, wait till your father gets home, man. I'm telling you, as one disciplined in the Lord, that's exactly what we're waiting for, man. We're waiting for, you know, hey, man, wait till daddy gets home, man, because he's going to settle this, right? And, but also when we're talking about, lack of fathers, two things, lack of fathers and moms playing the mommy and the daddy. I was raised in a generation where you had moms saying that I got to be both the mommy and the daddy. That doesn't turn out very well, because right now we have people who are confused about whether it's supposed to be a boy or a girl. Yeah. To think that these things don't have an effect on people is totally naive. And it's not a lack of fathers. I would offer, it's a lack of husbands. That's the real issue. It's a lack of husbands. We keep going with this narrative that there has to be a father. There has to be a father. It's like, Bill, anybody could be a father, right?
I'm with you. It's the difference between being a male and being a man.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So when you have the husband, you know, if you're just a father, then you're basically just teaching your kid, well, what is the importance? What is the importance? We have boys that are growing up basically just with the example of women are not necessary except for my pleasure. They're not necessary mm-hmm. for anything else, you know, and then vice versa. So how is a boy supposed to know how to behave around a woman and be responsible and be that and offer that sacrificial love that he's supposed to? How's a woman, where's her demonstration? What is her example that she's supposed to look up to? So we're raised in a generation where we see such deep insecurity. Right? People are so insecure. They have a broken spirit, man. Why? Well, how are they supposed to be secure? They weren't raised in that security where you have the security between a man and a woman. We live in the days where people keep saying to themselves, well, the most important thing in my life are my children. Most important thing in my life is supposed to be my children. Well, I see that that doesn't work. It's idolatry. The before your kids see how important they are, what your kid is supposed to see is the importance of your spouse. That's what they're supposed to see, right? They need to see the security in that. And out of that love for your spouse, that will be poured out onto your kids. It's not supposed to be the other way around. When people talk about how their kids are most valuable things, that's a marriage that's doomed. It usually is, because people say the same thing. My most important thing in my life is my kids. They make these platitudes and sanctimonious statements about the importance of their kids. What about the person that you made the kids with? What about that? Mm-hmm. You know, where is that important? So the kids ain't seeing that. They don't see that. So they're raised up to feel insecure. I mean, is it just a coincidence that people are so dang insecure today?
No, and that's a great point. I never really completely thought about it that way. But I mean, if you've got a mom who's got all these different baby daddies and the love interest in that person's life is constantly coming in and out the door, that's got to give a child a sense of, maybe I'm going to get out the door. Maybe they're going to get tired of me, you know, yep. and I'm out the door. And that certainly doesn't help. Just because we live in the age of lifted quotations out of context, let me just get this out here again. Mm. We're not talking about psychopathic beating of people. We're not talking about out of control rages. We're not talking about putting out cigarettes on you. We're not talking about any of that stuff. We're talking about appropriate discipline.
Yes.
And one of the things that has been so much a cause of kind of this post Dr. Spock raising of kids without real discipline is this idea that we can no longer say boys don't cry. In fact, that'll probably get you a jail sentence in certain cities in this country. If you were to have a child that went to a courtroom and said, my dad told me that boys don't cry, you'd probably throw the father in jail. Mm. But boys don't cry is a damn important thing for boys to learn. Mm. It really is. And anybody who says that there's no difference, no biological difference between the emotional levels of men and women hasn't met any men or women as a general rule. The reason that fathers tell their sons that you can't cry now is because in an emergency, in a crisis, somebody's going to have to be able to function. And when you instruct a boy, especially when you do it lovingly but firmly, who's crying over something and not over something trivial, something major, if you're able to say to him, son, you can't cry about this, what you're basically doing is you're instilling in that boy a sense of emotional control, mm-hmm. a sense that he is able to control his emotions in the moment. And this is the most important part. It's not a question of, geez, you're not supposed to feel any emotions. It's not that you're not supposed to be scared. It's not that you're not supposed to be sad. It's not that you're not supposed to be disappointed.
Right.
No, of course you're supposed to feel those things, mm-hmm. and you can feel them later. But Boys Don't Cry is a way of inculcating in young men the ability to respond in a crisis when response is necessary without becoming incapacitated by emotion. And that's a damn handy thing to have in an emergency.
Amen, man. And you know, in this age where you have these selective invokings of Jesus, because I like how these people, Jesus did it. They try to make Jesus fit their narrative, and they'll say things, well, Jesus cried. Didn't Jesus weep? You know, Jesus, man, you ain't faced with Jesus. You have not come to this point, you know, where Jesus, well, didn't he weep when he brought back his son? Yeah, of course Jesus wept, because he's going to bring this guy back and he knows what's going to happen to him. Right? Yeah, I brought him back. Okay, you guys see that I can bring back people back from the dead, right? Well, here come the Pharisees, and the Pharisees killed him. So yeah, Jesus is going to weep. It's like, it sucks that you guys don't believe this. So, but we're given over, you know, to, we're wanting men to embrace, you know, I guess our emotions. We're not supposed to be governed by our emotions. We're supposed to govern our emotions. Mm-hmm. Emotions are a real thing, man. We're supposed to feel sadness. We're supposed to feel anger and stuff like that. But like the Word of God says, don't let the sunshine go down on your wrath. You can't take that into your sleep. You got to be able to have control over your emotions and act on them accordingly, to where you don't sin against other people, you know. But feeling sadness, feeling anger, you know, fear and things like that, of course, you know, but these things are not supposed to get the better of us. We're supposed to discipline these things. And on a side note, because I know a lot of folks, you know, may tend to think that, you know, I come from a very religious angle and stuff like that. I'm not a religious person at all. I actually despise religion. I'm not a religious person. I'm a disciplined person. The Lord said to go make disciples of nations. He didn't say go out and make religions. So I'm a disciplined person. To say that I'm a religious person is actually a misnomer, but disciplined. I move out of the discipline of the Lord. That's how I live my life.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what I meant when I said about the boys don't cry thing. It means don't cry now. Mm. You can cry later. Jesus may have wept, but he didn't weep in front of Pontius Pilate, and he didn't weep and start sobbing when he was put on the cross. He was able to be strong when he needed to be strong. Mm. One of my favorite stories is about, I think most historians would say, probably the greatest general that the United States has ever produced in strategic sense anyway, and that's Ulysses S. Grant. Mm. And when Grant first took control of the Army of the Potomac, he'd been successful out west. They got put him in charge of all of the armies because Lincoln needed a fighter who could face the arithmetic, mm. even in the fights that the Union lost badly, mm. real badly. We still had so much more manpower than the South did, as we needed somebody who was just going to keep going. Mm. Anyway, so Grant is at his first battle, and I'm virtually positive this happened at his first battle called the Wilderness. And previously, the previous general, a couple earlier, Joe Hooker, had been, one whole wing had been rolled up by Robert E. Lee. At the end of the first day, both of Grant's wings were rolled up. And Grant suffered a much bigger defeat in the Wilderness than his predecessor had. And an aide to Grant came to his tent late that night and stopped before he entered the tent because he could hear him inside wailing, just sobbing. He said he'd never heard a man in so much pain before. Mm. But the salient point here is this. He didn't start sobbing when he was losing the battle. And when he got up the next day, he said, let's bring some guns up here and we're going to go south. We lost. We're not going back to Washington. We're going to Richmond. He was able to compartmentalize these tremendous emotions and responsibilities so that while the battle was going on, he's not in his tent crying. He's under enormous stress, but he has the emotional discipline to say, bring some guns up here. we'll get him tomorrow. And then later, when he has a chance to be alone and not have all of these consequences, then he allows himself to basically purge these emotions and cried his eyes out. Mm. I've always found that story to be so important. And I guess just to wrap it up from my point of view here, I've always found that story humanizes Grant in a way that he would have never been a human being if that hadn't happened. If he'd been made out of granite the whole time, you know, okay. But this is something entirely different. And I would not be in favor of stricter discipline for kids if it turned out that progressives were right. If it turned out that the self-esteem movement made happier kids, and if it turned out that lack of discipline made happier kids, and if it turned out that parents who try to be their child's best friends made happier kids, healthier kids, stronger kids, then I'd be in favor of those things. But I'm not, because they aren't.
Indeed, man. It's a fantasy, just like we said earlier, man. And these fantasies are not fulfilling. There is no real freedom in it. You know, this, like I said, these people they're chained to that. They're chained to a fantasy. And they will just, you know, they will feel unfulfilled by it. And unfortunately, they want to impose that on other people and try to make other people comply and agree that, see, this is the better way. And, you know, as we've long known, it's like, man, if your way is really better, why do you have to, you know, this is supposed to be a free market thing. There are certain things that are supposed to be law. There are certain things that we're supposed to abide by. Yes, and we have to have the discernment of what's good law and what's bad, and narratives that we're supposed to, you know, comply with, you know, for society, man, for us to be able to live together. But where, you know, the liberals are coming from, you know, progressives, leftists, whatever people want to call them that are at that end of the spectrum. It's at the end of the day, it's a fantasy, and it really doesn't work.
Yeah. And the problem, of course, is that if you raise weaker kids, then they become weak parents, which raise even weaker kids. Mm-hmm. The reason that the lack of discipline and this entire celebration of the lack of discipline has taken hold so much is because it's much easier than actually disciplining kids. It's no fun to have kids screaming, "I hate you." I mean, just this morning, I had to take I have a cat that's diabetic, and every 3-4 months he has to go to the vet for the whole day, and he has to get his blood sugar taken and stuff. And I dropped him off this morning, and I almost thought, I can think of some reason to not have to do this. And I realized, you know, I understand how trivial this is, but I realized, no, I don't want to take the cat because the cat is miserable and he's crying and he's sad and he's scared and confused, and I don't want to put him through that. But to not put him through that is to sentence him to death.
Yeah.
And so you have to find the strength to do something unpleasant for someone or something that you love.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there now who are too afraid of feeling bad so that they are not willing to do the hard things that are necessary for everyone to feel good.
Yes. Yes. And you know, we're taught that, I mean, it's one thing to have the kids, it's another thing to raise them. And a lot of people aren't prepared for that. You know, they're not prepared for, you know, and I know it's like one would say, well, who are you to talk? You don't have any kids or anything like that. I think there's something that goes on in our instincts where we can relate to that on a certain level. That's nominal, to where we can, you know, have an opinion on these things. And, you know, when we look at the observation of how these things are turning out, it's like, look, man, I understand that maybe you have a degree in the experience of being a parent, but we're seeing that a lot of that stuff that a lot of the culture is giving over to, man, that's not working. It doesn't work. We're decaying. And just like you mentioned earlier, you know, when you have people that, hey, I just want to be my kid's best friend and stuff like that. Sometimes being a person's best friend is doing those hard things. You know, say, hey, you know, this ain't going to fly here. You don't want to do that. And having the discernment and having a foundation to work from. You know, I've often heard people say that, well, you know, there's no instructions on how to be a parent. Yes, there is. There totally is. But, you know, a lot of people feel like they don't want to read it, and they feel like they're just going to be able to dive into the lake with no experience, and they're going to redeem themselves as parents and stuff like that. That doesn't work. Even the parent has to have a foundation, a sense of discipline, you know, and be able to answer, you know, to the discipline in order to show that and be an example to their kids with it. But more and more, we keep getting away from that.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. My experience has been that tough love is the truest and purest love of all. Mm. The most gut-wrenching thing I ever saw was an episode of Cops where this woman called the police on her own drug addict daughter. Mm-hmm. And as they were arresting her to take her away to rehab, this daughter was screaming and crying, and not even so much with hate, but mother, how can you do this to me? How mm-hmm. could you betray me? How could you betray me? And you could just see these daggers just landing mm-hmm. on her, you know, and just the agony that this mother was in. And then she watches her daughter drive off in handcuffs in the back seat of a police car, and just the grief and the guilt on her face. And I realized, my God, she must love that girl to go through that for her, you know, because if she didn't, if she hadn't made that call, that girl's going to be found under a bridge with a needle in her arm. And that's what real love is. It's having the strength to and the discipline to do the things you have to do for the people and the things you care about. Yeah.
Chastise those you love or chastises those he loves, as the word says.
That's exactly right. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Virtue Signal, which is made possible by the members at BillWhittle.com, especially the new member rush we had back in January. And it's getting to be time for another one of those coming up. I told you I wouldn't talk about membership for 3 months, and sure enough, I haven't. But we'll deal with that later. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for your membership, and we'll see you next time right here on the Virtue Signal.